Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
The Steve Austin Show this week is sponsored in part by Credit Associates. If you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you know what? You don't. There's a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. The credit card companies don't want you to know this, and if you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let Credit Associates settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. Call Credit Associates now, 1-800-400-5617 for free information. They'll even show you how much money you could save. Again, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. They depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. Call 1-800-400-5617. That's 1-800-400-5617.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the set of the toughest show on television, Broken Skull Challenge. We are set for a season premiere of Tuesday, September 26th, 10 p.m., 9 Central, only on CMT. Mark it down on your calendars. Set your DVRs. Season premiere of Broken Skull Challenge, Tuesday, September 26th at 10, 9 Central, only on CMT. And that plays into my guest here, who I will name in a moment. Right now, folks, I got to tell you about the new Podcast One app, which is now available for download at the App Store or Google Play. There ain't another podcast app like this one anywhere, and that's because the new Podcast One app is loaded with some cool features that let you do a lot more than just listen to your favorite shows. You can access behind-the-scenes photos, articles, and connect with other fans of the shows you like. And you can watch over 1,000 360 virtual reality videos. You can actually watch some of your favorite shows in virtual reality. Hey, it's like you're sitting in the same room with them. So get to the App Store or Google Play and download the new Podcast One app now. Well, I'll tell you what, man. I'm really happy to be talking to my guest today. She is an obstacle course racer. She is unbelievable. Her mental and physical preparation is just unbelievable, and she is a true warrior. Her name is Cassidy Watton. She runs obstacle course races. She's a Spartan racer, Tough Mudder X. She is my reigning, defending, returning champion out here at the Broken Skull Challenge. I got a chance because Cassidy earned the right to come out here in Season 5 and take a first crack at the Skull Buster because she is my returning champion. And I took this opportunity to grab an hour from her and shoot the breeze, talking with her about training, nutrition, how she got started, what her goals are. And I'll tell you what, I've had a lot of athletes out here, and she is at the top of the list. She's a class act. She is a go-getter. She's tough as nails. She's very smart, and she knows what she's doing, and she trains in the pain zone. Her mental prep and just the way she gets ready for things is just off the charts. So I'm looking forward to you hearing that conversation. But before we get to Cassidy, hey, man, I tell you what. Last night I came out to the Broken Skull Challenge compound just like I do on Sundays. I come out to prepare for Monday. It's our last week of filming. And it's SummerSlam. And I couldn't come out here in Agua Dulce in the middle of nowhere and not watch the second biggest pay-per-view of the year from WWE. So I sat down with my computer. I grilled some salmon and chicken on my Traeger pellet grill, and I watched SummerSlam. Well, I watched most of SummerSlam. I figured the event would start at 5 p.m. I was wrong. It started a little bit sooner than that. So I didn't get a chance to see all of SummerSlam. I will go back and rewatch the front half of it, and I'll talk to you about what I did see. I saw the back half of Finn Balor versus Bray Wyatt, and I saw the back half of it. So I know that Finn went over, but I can't really talk about the match too much because I didn't see it. But I did see Cesaro and Sheamus versus Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins for the Raw Tag Team Championship. And I tell you what, man, this match started off a little bit on the slow side. I was wondering if these guys were going to have, you know, a clunky match. And man, after about 2 or 3 minutes, they started settling in and getting their work done and started telling that story. And they really clicked in a good groove with lots of intensity and just a lot of good teamwork and action. The selling was off the charts. Shout out to Cesaro. There was a beach ball that was floating around, or some fan had it or whatever. I was bending down to get a scoop of salmon on my fork, and all of a sudden the crowd just goes crazy, and I see Cesaro absolutely destroying a beach ball. And it reminded me of way back in the day when I was in a match with someone, I don't even remember who it was, and a beach ball, I think Billy Gunn was in the match. I remember a beach ball coming into the ring, so just instinctively, I grabbed the thing and just kicked it out of the ring, and it popped the crowd. Cesaro did basically the same thing, except he's so strong, just destroyed the beach ball. I came out of my seat. It was awesome. It's one of those things where, you know, something happens, and there's that X Factor prop that no one had planned on, and someone capitalizing on it. So it was just a great high spot. But anyway, back to the match. Man, these guys settled in, started telling a story, and started working into the finish, and they just really, really built this match up. Lots of good teamwork, lots of great selling. Rollins and Dean Ambrose go over in the match, and I tell you what, just watching the video package that they played before that match, how they ended up, you know, sticking that fist out, and finally, you know, both those fists came together of a two-man reunion of the former members of the Shield, and it was a great story. It was one of those stories that you really bite into and follow along, and man, I tell you what, these guys really work well together. It was great seeing these two guys back together as a tag team. We'll see if they split them up and they go back into singles roles, but it was just an awesome match, man. Lots of energy. Good stuff, a couple of submission holds, the finishing sequence, the way they built that thing off, and the way that chain reaction of events took place. Awesome match, really, really good match. And then I tell you what, two of my favorite guys in WWE right now, AJ Styles and Kevin Owens, were going to wrestle for the United States Championship with special referee Shane McMahon. And I tell you what, again, I was thinking, okay, let's see if these guys are going to get off to a clunky start or what's going to happen. They've got a little bit different styles. Both guys can go like crazy. AJ Styles is absolutely phenomenal, no pun intended. And they had great chemistry. And, you know, Shane gets involved a lot. He's in the way. They set the table here with so many things where, you know, that was a three count. And Shane will go, no, that's a two. And so you knew what was going to come, you know, but you were just wondering when it would happen. And finally, it all happened, and everything, the crap hits the fan. And those guys told a hell of a story. It was great intensity. That one time AJ fired up on KO with that series of patented moves that he does. I got that back fist and all that stuff that he does, and tremendous chemistry between these guys that they just lit it up. So what a great match. And Shano did a great job in a match. And it was just super exciting. I was laughing while I was watching this because of the expressions. Hey, that was three. No, that was two. Because I knew what was going to happen, whatever it happened. And I was just so engulfed and just totally watching as a fan. And so I really loved that match. It was really, really good. And then a Jinder Mahal match versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the WWE Championship came out there. And, man, they rang the bell. And Shinsuke just all of a sudden just hauls off with a kick to the leg of Jinder Mahal. And I'm thinking, okay, wow, boy, snap that in. We're off to a start here. And then they kind of slowed down. And after that first snap kick to the leg, I thought, man, they're off to right track. They're going to just, you know, sizzle, shine him up. And, you know, let Nakamura really get his stuff in. But it kind of just dragged down a little bit. By the time the match was over and the Singh brothers get involved, it was okay. You know, they just needed more movement in that match. And, God dang, because Jinder moves really well for a guy as tall, as kind of a jacked up as he is. And, of course, Nakamura is Nakamura. I just thought that they would put a little bit more movement in that. Shinsuke was seemingly always working from the bottom position. There's a size difference there. But the match didn't really get going in the fashion that it could have got going. Jinder with the win. You know, it wasn't clean because, you know, Singh brothers came up and then Jinder took care of business. You can't take the belt off Jinder right now. You're still building him. And I didn't think the timing was right for Nakamura to win. Not here, not now. And I'm still looking for big things from this guy. And I know he can do them. I just thought with that leg kick at the beginning of the match that things would have happened in a lot quicker fashion with more movement incorporated into the match. You can't take that belt off Jinder right now. He's still in the building process. And he's still learning how to defend that belt. So for what it was, I mean, you know, some people wanted Shinsuke to win. Obviously, because they're Shinsuke fans, as I am. I just didn't see the belt changing hands at this pay-per-view, at this time, because it's the wrong time to take it off of Jinder Mahal, who's doing just fine, and he's getting better. I know he's been doing this for a while. Some people aren't that high on him. I am still high on him, but just more movement in there and use those ropes a little bit. You don't want to make a spot fest out of it. I just thought this match was going to be, you know, a little bit more action. And they slowed it down, and it was what it was. It was okay. And I didn't mind Jinder going over it at all because he's still in the building process. And so it was what it was. And then I tell you what. This goddamn main event, Brock Lesnar versus Samoa Joe versus Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman for the Universal title, a fatal four-way. Anybody can pin anybody, and whoever pins somebody is going to be the champion. God dang, I don't know where to start or finish on this other than every one of these guys looked like a superstar. Every guy did what they were supposed to do. There were some moments in there where everybody shined. And that stuff that Braun Strowman did to Brock Lesnar, putting him through the tables, then flipping that big table over on Brock as Brock laid there, and they carted him out of the arena on a stretcher. And you figured, you know, Brock was going to come back. And, of course, he did. And it was great when he did. But just him selling, holy smokes, Brock Lesnar at almost, whatever, 300 pounds, the dude is an absolute freak of nature. He's a beast. When that guy goes into sales mode, man, I'm telling you what it's like. It's like Hamlet in a Shakespeare play. Brock can sell his ass off, and it just looks like he's truly hurt. So that's a shout out to him. Roman Reigns received a very negative reaction going out, and that was just because people were booing him. But as far as a response, he got a great response going out. And so he's over. Can he get more over? Yeah, but he's over. He matters. People respond. Joe is just, his intensity, he brings so much intensity to everything he does. That's one of my favorite things that I like about Joe, and that's why I'm so fond of his work, just his intensity. And, of course, Brock, that bump he took over the top, you know, with the clothesline from Braun, just the athleticism within this guy. From whether it's UFC, you know, amateur wrestling, you know, professional wrestling, you know, there's really almost nothing this guy cannot do. So Brock is Brock, and he's a superstar. People were watching this match, and, you know, saying, hey, part-timer this, part-timer that. Hey, man, you know, that's the guy's contract. From a performance standpoint, holy smokes, Brock Lesnar was lights out in this match, and he always is. Braun Strowman, holy smokes, what a reaction he got. He was certainly built as kind of a featured guy in this match, and they've got big things planned for him. They teased those couple of face-offs there in the beginning, and then they went at it, and God dang, they gave the people just enough, gave me just enough that you want to see that down the line, and it's going to happen. The time for Brock to keep that title was last night, and he kept the title. I was fine with how he kept the title. A lot of people are mad. And then you're, because I was talking about some of the matches on Twitter about how great of a match that was. And it was a great match, one of the best I've seen. And especially a fatal four-way. You don't understand until you've been in a ring how big of a clustermuck those things can turn out to be. And everything in this match was just spot on. The cameras, the camera angles and some of the reveals. The timing was just impeccable, and the way they picked up guys entering frame and just a devastating blow to catch the viewing audience from pay-per-view on the WWE Network, like me, just totally like, oh, man, that was cool. So I like a wide angle, you know, But also, if you're standing in the crowd, you're going to see a wide angle. But when you're watching on television, you get those kind of reveals. Oh, man, it just ups the drama that much more. Just lots of hard physical work here. God dang, I tell you what, Braun got busted open with those steps. Every guy did a spot. One of those saves on a three count was just a frog's hair late. But, man, what a match. I just thought it was awesome. I'll get back and watch, you know, some of the earlier matches of the SummerSlam event. Like I said, I thought it started at 5, so I missed a lot of the show. But I just thought the what I saw was premier, and that back half of the card that I saw was just lights out. Jinder Nakamura could have tightened that thing up, used more movement. But that's enough about SummerSlam. Let's take care of some business. We're going to get to my guest, my Broken Skull Challenge, reigning, defending, returning champion, Cassidy Wotton, after I tell you guys that life is all about making the right choices, the best choices. And if there's one thing I know, when it comes to shaving, Dollar Shave Club is a smarter choice. With Dollar Shave Club, get a great shave at a great price that is conveniently delivered right to your door. It's an awesome life hack and no-brainer choice. Forget about buying cheap disposable razors that give you a cheap shave, and forget about spending a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech that you don't need. When you use the Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor with their Dr. Carver Shave Butter, the blade will just glide across, giving you a much smoother shave, preventing ingrown hairs and fighting razor bumps. I think if you check it out, you'll find that it's amazing. And you can also make a smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month. That's a $15 value for only $5. In your first month's box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price, and there are no hidden fees and no commitments. Cancel anytime you like. You can only get this offer exclusively at DollarShaveClub/Steve. That's DollarShaveClub/Steve.
Hey, everyone. It's former WWE host Lillian Garcia. Let me ask you a question. Do you ever wonder how your favorite stars make it to the big time? Then come check out my new show, Chasing Glory, with Lillian Garcia on PodcastOne.com. Hear me chat with some of your favorite athletes and entertainers about their rise to the top. It's about to get real, raw, and inspiring. So join me for new episodes every Monday on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, I'm sitting here in my trailer. I got Cassidy Wotton. She's earned the right because she is my returning champion to come out here and get a first crack at my skull buster. But we're not going to talk about all that. This is the first time we've ever really had a chance to sit down and talk with each other. We've been seeing each other for a long time out here on the set. But, man, we just come and go because that's how busy it is. So I got a chance to talk to you out there on the course the other day, and I was like, man, what an interesting person. I got to find out about her training tips, about her diet, and all this other stuff. So I'm glad I can finally sit down and talk to you. How are you?
Me too. I'm doing great. It's definitely, all business out there.
I know you've told your story many times, just like I've told mine many times. So I just want to just retrace some of the stuff that I already know. But just from seeing you perform out here at Broken Skull Challenge, I know you're big into the obstacle course racing stuff. And you know, you love CrossFit as well as part of your training methodology. But
used to be. But we'll get into that.
Used to be. Yeah, I do want to get into that because your training has shifted.
Definitely.
But let's take me back because you grew up in Connecticut.
I did.
And as a kid, you were just pretty much into sports from the get-go, always on the run.
As soon as I can, you know, walk, I was dribbling a basketball, whatever sport I could get my hands on, you know. Literally, you know, 5 years old when you could roll in rec sports, soccer, basketball, softball, everything, you know. And then as I grew up, kind of honed in on basketball through middle school and high school, and always used cross-country and track to, like, stay in shape for basketball was my kind of excuse at that point. It was kind of a love hate, but little did I know that would serve me later. I think the background miles and that running and endurance have served me now.
Going through your high school years, any accolades? I mean, like, were you All-state or all-district or whatever in basketball? Was it more track-oriented? Where did you excel the most?
Yeah, I mean, growing in school, middle school, high school, I was most athletic. All the, you know, the yearbook, all the awards at the end of the school year, athlete of the year, basketball, captained four sports my senior year, cross-country, powder puff, basketball, track. So big athlete. Interestingly enough, I didn't really pursue it in college. I really wanted to play basketball, but I didn't quite have the confidence that I could do that. I didn't have a great coach actually in high school basketball. you know, not to trash talk him too much or make excuses, but I wasn't in a program or with the people that really could have maybe pushed me to the top. So in college, I had dabbled in pole vaulting in track, because I was like, this running stuff is, you know, to stay in shape. But I actually found a girl's pole in the shed. And I was like, and no one was pole vaulting for the girls at my school. And I was like, can I try this? And so they let me no one coached me. Actually, my coach was funny. He sat me down with a VHS, with like this video from the 80s of someone like teaching me how to pole vault. So I pulled, I actually have the school record for my high school, which is funny. It's nothing super impressive, but no one was doing it, but it's just kind of funny to say.
So how did you get?
I think it was like 8'6" or something. In high school, like 9 feet is like would get you to state. So it's not horrible, but it's like, it, you know, no one even told me what to do. I just ran into the thing. But I thought that was a very interesting athletic sport.
Back in the day, you know, when I got into track and field in seventh grade, I figured, man, I got this great endurance. I'll be a long distance runner. And then I was running around the track one day. Yeah, believe it or not. And I wasn't the weight I am, and I didn't have the football background yet. But I was running around one day, and one of the guys was throwing a discus. His name was Russell Bitters. And he was heaving that thing and heaving it, and he was going through all the motions. He wasn't very good. But the angst and the struggle on his face, I said, hey, man, I said, let me try that. So, man, yes. I just winged it out there, just kind of pressed one from the front end of the circle. And turns out that was my event. So I started throwing the discus. And then my older brother was a great pole vaulter. He had to stop because he had a congenital back problem. And I said, well, hey, man, if Scott can do it, maybe I'll give that a shot. So in junior high, we had this pole. Like you said, you found a women's pole. We had a pole. And the pole wasn't about, it might have been 9 feet long. And it was, you know, about 6 inches around. I mean, so it didn't have any flex to it. And, and I didn't have any form. I just ride that thing up. And I think I might have cleared 8 feet. I was horrible.
Yeah.
So anyway, that I just had to give my pole vaulting experience. People know me from my days in a squared circle in my football playing days, but I was actually a track athlete. And then because I was a running back in high school, my coach made me run the hurdles and made me do the running events because he wanted to increase my speed. Through your athletic pursuits and all these accolades and all your athletic awards coming out of high school, what kind of student were you? Because I've been watching your Instagram account. It's Cassidy Lane Watton, because I know you talk a lot about training at Epic Hybrid Training.
Yes, sir.
And you come across as, and as I've known you, a very savvy, smart competitor who asks a lot of questions and leaves no stone unturned. So how were you academically starting out in school, going through the high school years?
You know, academically, I was just always very average. You know, I think plenty smart, but wasn't interested in sitting down and doing that. So I was a pretty bare minimum, but I got enough, you know, good enough grades to get into a very good college. I went to Pepperdine University. So, you know, I got enough done where my, you know, my other accolades and my other leadership qualities got me into a good school. And same in college, actually. Funny enough, my major is in Spanish. So I actually have a bachelor, a $200,000 Bachelor of Arts in Spanish, which is just completely ridiculous and wasteful. But, of course, you know, got me where I am today physically, you know, in California.
So what were you planning on doing with that?
You know, no, I had no plan. I just have no idea why they let kids decide, make a decision like that at 18 years old. I think, so I had studied abroad in Argentina, and I got back as my junior year, and they go, you need to declare a major, that thing. Now. And I was like, I don't know. It's the only thing I enjoyed studying. My sister actually had gone to Pepperdine for the same thing, and she told me, don't first of all, don't go to college until you know what you want to do, and don't major in Spanish because there's nothing to, I ended up just following that path anyway. And I enjoyed studying it. And so that's just what I did. You know, I saw the exercise science majors and this and that. And I knew that I liked athletics, but I was like, I'm no good at science. So I just kind of wrote it off. But I was just so young that I don't know why anyone let me decide that.
So you end up going to Pepperdine, which is in Malibu. I used to live out there. I used to drive back and forth by that. It's a wonderful campus. My question is, coming up out of Connecticut, how'd you end up out in Malibu?
So, like I said, my sister went to Pepperdine, but I don't know how well known a fact it is, but it's a Church of Christ school. And like, I grew up going to it's non-denominational, but technically a denomination itself, in the Church of Christ. And so in that community, all we know of are those schools. So I applied to a few down south and a few, and then Pepperdine, which was like, you know, quote unquote, my reach school, and it was the most expensive and this and that. Turns out it was cheaper. I got in, first of all, then it was cheaper for me to go to Pepperdine than to any of these other small little conservative Christian churches in the South, just because of the scholarship they gave me. So that's what I said.
Well, once you got through Pepperdine and you made the swing out here to the West Coast, have been to Connecticut. WWE is based out of Stamford, Connecticut. So it's a great state.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden you get out here in Cali. What made you stay? I know you're in New York City now, but you lived out here for quite some time. Was it the weather?
Yeah. I mean, I loved Malibu. I fit right in. I mean, I just, no shoes, bathing suit all the time. I got into surf. I got into mountain biking. I just loved the lifestyle out here. So I always feel like people guess that I'm from California anyway, so I feel like that's really me. Now, I also just had this adventuresome spirit to move around a lot. My sophomore year in Argentina, and then after I graduated from Pepperdine, I actually spent a year in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, just because I wanted to go work in a national park. I, you know, got a job at a restaurant after that and snowboarded my butt off all winter. And then I was like, I got to get out of here because I'll just do this. I'll just drink whiskey and PBR and snowboard for the rest of my life. So I went back to Malibu actually for a few years. And that is when I actually got into fitness. So
okay, but you come out of high school, all these accolades, well accomplished, no scholarship offers for track or whatever?
No, I didn't think about really taking it anywhere. I just thought that was I wasn't going to be a professional athlete. So I thought the next step was you're supposed to go to school and figure out what job you're going to do. So yeah.
As we speak, what, you're 28 years old?
I am, yeah.
Okay, so you're very involved with obstacle course racing, Spartan, Tough Mudder X, Broken Skull Challenge. Anything I'm leaving out there? I mean, you're involved in everything.
That's pretty much, yeah. Here, Broken Skull and Tough Mudder X, and then mostly Spartan has been my, you know, really paved the way for me, or just been, you know, I've been on the Spartan Race Pro Team for a couple of years, so they've been my main, you know, team and brand and company that I follow in their circuit for the past few years.
So how did you take the plunge into that world?
So like I said, so I came back to Malibu after Wyoming, and I got whatever jobs I could. I started working at the desk at a gym called Malibu Fitness. I started...
That wasn't a very good gym when I lived there, and you came in.
Okay, you must be thinking of Malibu Gym. Malibu Fitness is great. It's up the road a couple miles by Zuma.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's just great, Joy. I mean, they brought me up in fitness, and really, you know, I started personal training there, and then I started teaching spin and TRX and whatever they needed, and really just fell in love with fitness. And it was, I just have to tell the story the way it is. It was there when I had this. There's this blonde spin instructor at Malibu Fitness that just kept harassing me. You may know him. His name's Hunter McIntyre, and just relentlessly, and the rest is history. You might know there, but we, you know, he ended up taking my first Spartan race in Arizona in February 2013. And at that point, you know, I was casually working out. I didn't have anything to work out for. So you know how that is. It's hard to find the motivation or be focused. So, and I think I got like sixth or something without trying. So then I started trying a little bit, and from there on out, a lot of podiums over the next couple of years, hit it at a good time too, pretty early on. And the rest is history there. So then I began honing in on obstacle racing, because back up a couple years, I did get into CrossFit a bit in college. And then, so when I got back to Malibu, that was still kind of how I was training. I just didn't know. I was like, I know that there's got to be another way or a better way, but I did love it. But that's the way I trained. I kind of did CrossFit plus some endurance, because I was doing these endurance races. And then it wasn't until a couple years after that. So I actually was thinking about going the CrossFit competition route when I stumbled into obstacle racing. Then I'm like, well, I'm making a little bit of money at this right now, rather than like the 4-year plan to maybe make some money in CrossFit, you know? So anyway, I went for obstacle racing, and then, yeah, I don't know if you want to transition to where my training changed from CrossFit, but
I do. Cause I noticed, probably in a change from when I met you till now, I know your training has changed.
Yeah.
So in your formative years, when you met Hunter and just starting out in Spartan racing, what was your basic training setup?
It was a lot of way too much powerlifting, way too much lifting that it's just a superfluous amount for an endurance athlete. Then we were convincing ourselves, I say me and Hunter, I think he still does a little bit more of that than I do now, but convincing ourselves that like, oh, we're getting really strong and we're getting, we're fast and training that endurance. But man, I was so sore all the time. My legs were so sore. My legs were so heavy all the time. I remember we're trying to do that endurance on top of it. And, you know, I wasn't that fast. I never was that fast of a runner. I'd always just made up for it with my strength and conditioning and grit and just maybe a little bit of genetics. So, and I just, until I thought that was the way it was, you're just supposed to feel like all the time. And it turns out that that's not true. So right. I have found a better way.
You said genetics. Let me ask you real quick before we go into your training, because you also talk about foam rollers and the way you've changed your training to be a little bit and less pain and feeling better and more fresh. What kind of background do you come from? Were your parents competitive athletes? I mean, because obviously you are a great athlete. Did you just come from nothing or scratch, or your parents?
Yeah, it makes no sense. So I was raised by a single mom, 4 kids. So she's awesome. So that speaks for itself, I think, just the grit of watching her and just also being one of 4 kids, having to kind of chip in. I mean, that in itself will give you something. But my mom doesn't have an athletic bone in her body, and it's just so funny watching her watch me. She's so proud, but she's just like, I told you all my scrapes from the skull buster, and she's just like, what are you doing to your body? But she loves it. But anyway, no, and I'm pretty sure I don't have contact with my father's side, but I'm pretty sure there's nothing. My mom said there's nothing really there. I have two older brothers and 1 older sister. And, you know, they dabbled in sports before high school, but no one really stuck with it. Like my sister's probably the second most athletic to me, not my 2 brothers. So I'm kind of, came out of nowhere, and I'm not really sure why.
So tell me about Spartan racing. I've studied it somewhat, but what is the average length of the courses or the obstacles that you must complete? Do they vary? Who determines that?
Yeah, so Spartan race, they come in 3 distances, a sprint, which is like 3 to 5, a super, which is around 8, and a beast, which is around 13, or they say 13 plus. So huge range there. So I've dabbled in all of them. And I've really tried to add the endurance to what I think my natural thing is, which is my explosive engine and my, you know, under 20, 30 minutes. And I was able to improve on that and do fairly well. But as the sport develops and more endurance athletes are coming into it, I'm learning to go back to my roots and just hone in on the as short as I can get, basically.
And when you said those distances, you're talking about miles.
Yes, yes.
So with the difference in miles, but you prefer the short courses, would
you
say?
I
do. Okay. So then how do you train for that? Or the old method of training versus a new method of training?
For me right now?
Yes.
So most people, I'd say the girls that are the top 10 in the circuit for those races, which are the Supers and the Beasts, is like the main circuit this year. It's on NBC. It's like the championship series, they call it. They are putting in miles and miles and miles a week and supplementing with strength to have the strength to get through the obstacles. Whereas I'm the opposite. So I love to do a lot of strength, and, you know, the strength now is different than what people might think of as strength. And then I add the running. So I tried to put in the miles. I really did. I did like my long, slow 3 hour stuff and my mid distance intervals, my short intervals. And I tried to be a runner and I got a little better, but not that much better. And it's just going back to genetics, you realize that, that matters. Like you're made for something. I could put in 100 miles a week and never beat, say, these girls that are top three in this long series, because it's just not the way I'm made, and vice versa with them racing me on something short and explosive with a lot of strength. So I started working about 2 years ago at a gym called Epic Hybrid Training. So, it's a boutique fitness studio that does all high intensity interval circuit training. So we are on MMA mats, so it's all barefoot training. If you look at the gym, it's an empty space. I don't want to say box, and think CrossFit, we get that all the time. Is this CrossFit? No, it's nothing like it, but you just don't know anything else. You'll see monkey bars. You'll see a ton of kettlebells. So that's our main, strength component there. And then, you know, your plyo boxes, your resistance bands, your, med balls, things like that. But it's super fun. It's very unique in that, I write the programming, so I get to kind of make a lot of things up. So, doing a lot of hybrid movements, combining things, and just.
What would you call a hybrid movement?
So say, you know, using a kettlebell, I'm doing a push up, and then I'm jumping up and doing a snatch on the kettlebell, or I'm doing a donkey kick, which is kind of like in a bear crawl position, then right into a sit out, or a lot of people call them break dancers, or I'm going across monkey bars, and the next station I'm doing burpees, and the next station I'm doing, goblet squats or some compound movement with the kettlebell. So, it's very, very challenging. And I just love writing these workouts because it's just, I literally get to create usually 8 stations that just are just like you try to build this course that are just built just to like really break you down every station. And then it's like, oh, I have to go through that 4 more times. And that just really adds up by the end. So I think it is the ultimate strength and builds the ultimate strength and conditioning machine.
So when you started training at Epic Hybrid in New York City, and that's the gym that Alex Nicholas runs.
Yes.
Correct. So did you pick his brain for some of your programs? I mean, this was a new training style for you, right?
Yeah. So actually when I started working there, he was kind of rolling his eyes at me, still hanging on to my barbell and doing my heavy lifts. And eventually it didn't take much convincing, but I just totally dropped it because of these workouts. I felt so much better. I felt leaner, lighter, more athletic. My engine got better, not only for short stuff, but also my endurance engine. Like I came off of, I moved from Malibu to Miami for a year and now New York for a year to totally flat places. And I jumped in a few of these longer races and I was charging up these mountains better than when I was training in the mountains. So I think all these like body weight or just like middle range weight reps on my legs have really served me in running up mountains. This high intensity interval training, it also adds to your endurance engine as well. There's lots of studies that it also increases your endurance. Now, I'm not saying that everyone could get away with not running, but right now I only run about 10 miles a week tops, which is really low for someone who does what I do. But most of my training is done at Epic in under 30 minutes, super high intensity. Now, sometimes it might be 2 times a day, but most of the time, 30 minutes.
I was talking to you the other day, we were outside and I asked you a little bit about your training and you said, I will never do a compound movement just by itself. I'll do a compound movement and then I'll throw something high intensity behind it. Now that blew my mind because then since I talked to you, and this was a while back, I just kind of said, well, you know what? I've been talking to so many people that come out here to the Broken Skull Challenge, whether it's from CrossFit or people, OCR or whatever, and Alex and then you from Epic Hybrid. I was like, man, I've been hearing these people talk about this, but when the way you said it, it really resonated with me. So me being such a stick in the mud with my training, barbells, it's the same old over and over and over again. And at this stage of my life, it's like, hey, you know what? I'm just looking to get leaner. I'm not trying to be the biggest, baddest guy on planet Earth. And so I started incorporating some of the things I got from you just recently. So I appreciate the 411. And now I'm watching you on Instagram. And once more, I got to plug your Instagram. It's Cassidy Lane Watton, because you can see a lot of the workouts that you're writing. I want to ask you about that. Just amazing stuff that you do there. Why do y'all always train barefooted?
So, to be totally honest, it started when Alex started the gym 5 years ago almost now. It was because he started it in an MMA gym. So he was training MMA, this guy in New York City, and he decided, or they made a deal where he'd come in and, you know, do some strength and conditioning part and then they have an MMA part. So he was basically renting out from this guy. So it was just in an MMA gym. So that's how it started. However, we've followed through with it now in almost, well, 9 locations by the end of the year. We followed through with it in every company owned and every franchise location, because just the incredible benefits. I mean, you remember the whole minimalist trend that happened in the Vibrams and people were going crazy? I think they had the right idea. Okay, so we weren't born with these big clunky things on our feet. There's lots of like sensory information we get from the ground that's cutting off, and it creates all these problems from the grounds up. Ankles, knees, hips, this and that. I think they had the right idea. I think that got a lot of crap in the beginning because people started to put on these Vibrams of like go on a 10-mile run on concrete and really F themselves up. And so that kind of went away, and then they went with the over cushioning. But I think that was the right idea. So I think Epic provides like a safe environment to get that barefoot time to where it's not only strengthening your feet, but it's also like allowing you to be more athletic. So I'm sure you've heard of like powerlifters. Like, I think I read this book of like this Russian powerlifter that like would lift, like do his heavy squats on like rocks and pebbles because barefoot, so that you would like tune in to all these extra muscles. There's like, I forget the number. I don't want to mess this up, but a few hundred muscles and tendons in the ankle and foot. So lets you tune into all that stuff and kind of in a safe way. We got soft mats, soft plyo boxes, so you're not going to wreck yourself like you would on concrete, but you get to have that barefoot time. Now I get to have it like all day long that I'm coaching and training, but I think it's awesome for these people that are walking around all day, particularly in New York City, in like high heels or these awful work shoes.
When you went to Epic and you're talking training philosophy with Alex Nicholas, what is his background? Because, I mean, I know he's done death races. Mm-hmm. He's been out here. He's an amazing competitor. Where does his knowledge come from with all these routines that, you know, all of a sudden you start getting introduced to him? Now you're making them up, because I want to get into that. But where does his experience come from a strength training standpoint? Because he has a very successful gym in New York City, Epic Hybrid Training.
Yeah, so he, growing up, he's played football, and he played football in college, and then he got into MMA shortly after that, like very into fighting. And then right around there, got into obstacle racing. I'm trying to think if I missed a sport, but he's just, a super athlete. When he was in New York at this point, he just owned a bar, was training MMA, and that's it. And he was like, well, I want to create something. He wasn't planning on building a fitness empire. He's like, I want to create a workout in a gym that's I could bring my friends to, first of all, and everybody could do it. So that's another thing. We train, we offer different levels. So you can have a high level athlete literally compete. It's just the idea of like a knee pushup, you know, versus all the way up to like a clapping pushup or something like that. Everyone could come, and it's fun. He was just bored with like the workouts that he'd done, like the football lifts that he did all his life. And this, nobody questions it. Everyone just does the same thing year after year. And then, I think he got a lot from MMA as far as that was fresh for him. And then obstacle racing, I think that's where he got like the whole aerial obstacle, like the monkey bar thing going on. So he kind of combined it into Epic Hybrid Training. So it's a hybrid of kind of everything he learned, and then also his own twist just to make it more fun and exciting. It's kind of like an in and out, like kick your ass type thing. Just get it done efficiently, have fun, and work super hard.
Man, I was talking to one of the guys out here who works in the challenge department is Alan Bishop. You know what I'm talking about. And he comes from a CrossFit background, but he's also an adventure competition where they would go.
Adventure races?
Yeah. I mean, like hundreds of miles. Mm-hmm. But anyway, crazy training. And I would read some of his workouts, and I'm like, you know, like an AMRAP workout that's going to last 20 minutes. I'm thinking, dude, 20 minutes, man, how can you really get by on that? Well, I'm stuck in the mud. Before I had to talk with you, you know, I always train like a bodybuilder. I've never been a bodybuilder, but that's the way I would classify my training. And then, hey, then go do, you know, 30 to 60 steady state on my cardio.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I started looking at you, watching what you were training and how you were training on your Instagram account, I was like, holy smokes. Now I get, you know, what you're talking about or Alan's talking about on a 20 or 30 minute workout. I've seen you jammed up for time. And one of your favorite workouts when you're jammed up for time is that 17 minute thing you posted some months back. But in creating a workout, the hybrid formula, if you're just going to do what you do down there,
sure.
How do you go about throwing something, a system together or a training methodology? First of all, let's talk about one workout, and then I want to talk about, you know, throughout the course of a week, because certainly at some point you've got to think overtraining or training too much.
Sure.
And because, I mean, you're going such high intensity. Break that down for me. Help me understand it.
Yeah. So as far as creating a workout, if I'm going to walk epic classes, it's not much different than if I were to walk in there myself. I do try to take an epic class every day, but you know, sometimes I'm coaching all of them, so I'll come up with something in between, and or I have an event coming up, so I'll come up with something special for myself. But it's always gonna have, you know, 6 to 8 stations or movements, and it's always gonna be on the clock. It's always gonna be on the clock. Okay, there's no reason for me to work out if it's not going to be timed for me. And what I mean by that is intervals, set amount of work, set amount of rest.
Now, but also a benchmark that you're going to prove upon, correct?
Yeah. And that's interesting because a lot of people then say, you know, how do I know how I'm going to improve? And that is, I think my favorite way to measure strength is, your force production. Like, so for say, take squats for 30 seconds. If I were to squat against you for whatever, for weight, I could never compete with you. But let's say me and you, Steve, who could squat more weight in 30 seconds? Then I might be able to compete with you. So it's more interesting for me. This is like, I'm going on a tangent about a competition I want to create that has to do with all intervals. Somebody like you and I who could compete next to each other, and maybe you squat 300 pounds 10 times in that 30 seconds, and I'm, you know, have 100 pounds and I probably go even lighter, but I'm just ripping at it. So that's an interesting measure of fitness to me. And I think, and then the question at the end of that is who's fitter, but you at least have a number, a poundage number. So a little bit harder to measure than like, boom, a time on a workout like they do in CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do something, especially since I repeat workouts, I know, you know, how I know what weight I'm going to clean and press 2 kettlebells for 30 seconds. And I know how many reps I generally get. So if I jump up from 35s to 40s in 1 week, and then I'm increasing weight or increasing reps or one or the other, that's really how you're measuring improvement. So a little bit of math involved, but to me, it's just as effective as writing a workout another way. So I'll take work and rest, you know, 30 seconds on, 15 seconds off, or 40 on, 20 off, or, you know, obviously the less rest you get, the harder it is. And then the movements, I'll always have heavy kettlebells in there. Like I was telling you the other day, I think they are the ultimate strength and conditioning crusher, because there's no way you could swing around a kettlebell without jacking up your heart rate. And those things are heavy. They're no joke. Just because it's not a barbell doesn't mean it's not heavy. And it's a challenging object. You know, it moves in 3 dimensions. So you're not just one with the barbell up and down. You know, every time you rack it and then bring it up, you're getting a full rotation in your shoulder, and then you're back swinging it behind you. You're getting another rotation here to here. So they're, I can't talk enough about kettlebells. I mean, they're just awesome strength and conditioning machine. So that was my number one. Always going to have a kettlebell. Always also going to have a body weight movement. So, or at least one body weight movement. The burpee, just from the average Joe to the elite athlete, you just can't get away with not having a burpee in a workout. It's just, and I used to foo-foo burpees hardcore. And when I was CrossFitting, I would never put them in a workout. I just thought they were so silly. And when the CrossFit, I'm sorry, when, Spartan race, you do 30 burpee penalties and everyone's shouting Aru. And I was like, I just thought it was so, they were so dumb, but you know, I love them now. It's just
what
full body.
What changed your mind?
You know, having to do them. You know, a lot of these things. When Alex brought me into Epic, I foo-fooed a lot of it. A lot of the bodyweight exercise, bear crawling around, donkey kicks, sit outs. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And then when I tried to go as hard as I could at that one movement, bodyweight or whatever it was, for 40 seconds, I absolutely just crushed me. And then, I mean, the results for my performance were just undeniable, and my body changed. I got leaner. I just got just so fit off of it. So just challenging the body in different ways, making your body move in three dimensions, being in control of your own body weight. That's the third element I would mention, is aerial obstacles. I mean, we don't go so as far as to look like a ninja warrior gym, but we've got monkey bars. We've got other weird grip things. We're doing a lot of pull-ups, pullovers, muscle ups or assisted muscle ups, and just being able to be in control of your own body weight suspended in the air, I think, is an incredibly athletic thing. And also to try to do that with a high heart rate is just soul crushing.
A high heart rate, that brings to mind a question I wanted to ask you, and I'm going to do that when we come back from the break. I'm sitting here talking to Cassidy Watton. She's one of the toughest competitors I've ever seen in my life. On social media, on Instagram, you are
Cassidy Lane Watton.
Are you on Twitter?
Yes, Cassidy Watton.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and thank another sponsor that makes this podcast possible, and that's TrueCar. When you're looking to buy a car, it's important that you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. Often enough, this is not the case, as people configure cars online only later to find out that they're not available. But with TrueCar, you get real pricing on actual inventory. This is not pricing from TrueCar, but from an actual dealer. And even more so, a local certified dealer of your choosing that is committed to offering you a competitive market price. TrueCar users are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. There are over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. With the big Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather fight just upon us, and the NFL season just around the corner, it's about time I told you about our new sponsor, MyBookie. MyBookie.ag has been the number one rated online sports action site for 3 straight years. Join thousands of online players and start betting at MyBookie. MyBookie has in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new best-in-class mobile website that makes wagering on the go a breeze. And unlike some other websites you might find, MyBookie offers fast, no-hassle payouts when you win. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. Use promo code Austin to activate the special offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today or call 844-900-BETS. Expert or rookie, you got to check out MyBookie. Sign up today and use promo code Austin to activate the special offer.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
All right. We were talking about heart rate. I still want to talk a little bit more about training. And I also want to talk a lot about nutrition.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're just a flat-out machine over here. And I don't want to get ahead of myself. Back to the heart rate. I was talking to you the other day. And I said, well, do you wear a heart rate monitor? Because I'm thinking 220 minus your age is going to give you your max heart rate. You know all this.
Yeah.
You don't care about all that. You know if you're revved up or not. So
exactly.
You're not a heart rate monitor person.
No, I think
it's all instinctive.
Yeah, I think that heart rate training is useful for endurance athletes, you know, to get that aerobic base training or whatever it is, and for beginners. So, you know, people that are never used to raising their heart rate, we'll literally have people come in and they're like, I think I'm dying. It's like, nope, your heart rate has just never gone above 170, whatever, in your life. So for beginners, it's good to know. A lot of people, it's very trendy these days to have wearables and be able to see your results on a screen at different studios. But yeah, I'm not concerned with that at all. Because I know when my heart's pounding out of my chest, I know I pretty much tell you exactly where I'm at. And that's where I try to get myself most days in training.
What does a week look like for you? Because like coming from my standpoint, okay, just look at it like this. Chest on Monday, back on Tuesday, mm-hmm. Shoulders on Wednesday, arms on Thursday, I'll squat on Friday or take a weekend off. I mean, that's just a basic template.
Mm-hmm.
So how many days a week are you in a gym actively training? Not if you're teaching. I'm talking about strictly training.
I would say on average about 6, but I'm not very scientific with it. You know, if after 2 really hard days, I went a little too hard, I will take a day off. Or if it's after 5, I'm feeling good. Or if I know that I have to travel that day and I won't be able to work out, I'm going to push through 5, 6 days and take my day off then. So But most days I'm working out.
Are you trying to crush a body part? I mean, obviously for you being an obstacle course racer, focusing on that right now, you're not concerned with the size of your arms. We're going to talk about your figure competition down the road. But with respect to how you train, it's not about having a great set of traps or shoulders or all that. So how do you go about designing the workouts that you put yourself through every single day?
Yeah, just like the concept of never training strength without conditioning, I never train upper without lower. I never train either without core. It's, for me, it's all interconnected, and there's literally no purpose for me to ever separate a body part, strength from conditioning. What I'm training for is always going to tax all of the above. So why ever separate that in training? I mean, I understand cross training and all that, but I have kind of ditched the what people say is right. Cause I've tried back when I was CrossFitting, I did all the splits, all the powerlifting, the low intensity, I've done the CrossFit thing. I've done the endurance athlete thing of all the separating and then combining and this and that. And, same thing with diet, which we'll get into. I've tried every specified from paleo to vegan, and it all comes back to what I found works for me. And it all comes back to, and we'll talk about with training, always combining it all the time is just what works for me.
Okay, at 28 years of age, I mean, to me, what I've seen, and maybe in theory, you're in your prime. And so I remember when I was 28, hell, I was bulletproof. I could do anything. I could get 2 hours of sleep. It didn't matter. I was ready to go the next day. So with respect to that, you being at the age of a world-class athlete right now, have you experienced or as in tune with your body is regarding your heart rate and all of that and the volume or intensity that you put your training through or your body through? Does overtraining ever come into play, or are you aware of it, or it just does not affect you?
Yeah, I do think about it a lot. I think it does affect me, especially as a woman. And I'm recently just getting like my adrenals checked and stuff because I think I have some sort of fatigue going on. But I'm very aware of like getting enough rest. I really sleep a lot. Like I'm like 8 hours plus naps. So sleep is super important to me, and refueling is important to me. But I honestly, I feel like I could train every day more now than I could in the past because I'm not working out as long. So I'm working out super intense. But back when I was living in Malibu, you'd find me at the gym for 2 hours and then I'd be on a 2 hour mountain bike and I just, volume was king. Volume is not king for me anymore. So, although I'm going hard every day, like I said, most of the time it's 30 minutes. So, theoretically I should be able to recover in order to do that 30 minutes again the next day.
Okay, I want to talk to you about fueling the machine, what you put inside your body with respect to nutrition. From back in the day to now, has anything changed? Because you mentioned paleo, you mentioned vegetarian.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me about that.
So it is my body and my philosophy and my eating, everything changed about 2 years ago. Just coincidentally, the time that I went to Epic, I actually moved across the country to go work there. And the story really is, at the time I was dating Hunter and he wanted to try vegan in order to get rid of an inflammation injury. So we were living together at the time and I tuned up, I was cooking vegan, this and that, but I wouldn't go there because I grew up eating three meals of meat a day. It was not a meal if it didn't have meat. I would foo-foo on vegetarians and just hardcore. However, he, tried the vegan thing for a while. I don't remember what he did. Maybe he went back, but slowly, I just kind of lost interest a little bit in meat. And I was coming up on my figure competition. So I decided to try vegan for about a month. And then I went into figure and then I figured I needed at least fish and eggs. I didn't want to go into that claiming vegan. So really, I can't even explain it to you. It's not like I had a come to Jesus moment or I watched a bunch of documentaries with all these scare tactics on meat, although I have watched them and kind of just kept it out of sight, out of mind. It just was kind of natural. And like I said, 2 years ago, I made that move. I started training, not CrossFit, but Epic, and I started not eating meat. And I just feel 1,000 times better. I walk around leaner, not by trying, but just because naturally, first of all, I think my workouts are more effective in burning fat, but not only that, it's just a simple matter of mathematics. My protein sources are less caloric, compounded over months and years. You know, that's less calories. So I walk around, you know, back when I was in Malibu, I was walking around 150, and now I walk around 143 without any intentional weight loss or diet, you'd say.
And that's an extremely lean 143. Before you got into that figure competition, didn't you start off at like 11%, or did you get to
11%? Yeah, so I was already super lean. It was just kind of a bucket list item for me, and a lot of people that say, you know, I have the body for it or whatever. So I just figured, what the heck, I'll get it done. So I measured my body fat. This is interesting. I measured my body fat before, and I believe it was 11%. And,
which is lean for a woman to begin with.
Yeah. And it was stupid, really, how I went about it. I thought that I had to, I bought into everything in the beginning, you know, what you're supposed to do. I talked to figure competitors, bodybuilders, and what they're going to tell me is what they were fed. And what everybody's doing is, you know, pack your little meals, your five meals a day in a Tupperware and eat this and that and do your Stairmaster and do your lifts. And so I bought into that a little bit, although I couldn't bring myself to do the bodybuilding and the Stairmaster. I mostly just still did epic classes, but I would go into the gym and do those accessory work, which I think was completely unnecessary. What happened was, 4 months later, when I measured my body fat, I had lost weight, but I was the same exact body fat. So I lost muscle, and I was still eating 30 grams of protein every 3 hours. So that's another, just for me, just a lesson in all that's out there, the new and the old. So there's the old, and for the old school bodybuilders, it's, you know, you do your lifts, you pack your meals, it's carbs and protein, it's a little mathematical equation, or all your macros, and that's it. And I just think that, obviously, a lot of people are doing very well with that. But for me, I think I'd be better off right now. I could do a figure competition tomorrow and simply dehydrate, or I guess give me 2 more days, hyperhydrate, dehydrate, and I would do better. And my muscles would have been fuller. I wouldn't have lost muscle, and I would have done better. So that's just a lesson to me, and to not listen to the old stuff. And then there's so much new age. Oh my goodness. Like biohacking and this diet and that diet. It's so hard to not listen to the noise. And, luckily I've been able to try a lot of it, but what I've come back to is just pretty much moderation, everything as far as diet goes.
Yeah. And also, whatever works for you.
Exactly.
Whatever works for Joe Blow, man. I've tried to Joe Blow things, and I got to find out what works for me, as you did. How frustrating and how shocking was it to you as an athlete, muscle mass, whether you're trying to have it or not, all of a sudden you go into a contest, you found out, yeah, you lost weight, but everything you lost was muscle.
Because
that's not what you're there to do. Did that do, like, oh my God, what happened?
Well, it was frustrating too, because I really like food, particularly like ice cream and, like, you know, all those indulgent things. And I was just, that I had dieted for 4 months and ate cold fish at 8 in the morning. I was like, I shouldn't have listened to you jokers. So that was mostly what I was upset about, but it was a good learned lesson.
Tell me about, because I'm just not guessing your calorie counter. I'm just thinking it's you eat food. So take me through, like, what you would eat in a normal day. I know it's going to be pretty random, so you eat different things.
Yeah.
But kind of give me a go-to day for what your nutrition looks like.
Yeah, I go through phases, but I do generally eat pretty much the same thing. And my breakfast is, I go through phases of eating breakfast, and I always eat breakfast. I love eggs, but whether that's at 6 a.m. or 10 a.m., I usually, these days, for the past solid amount of months, I've been pretty much, I guess, doing what they call intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. Is a trendy word, but basically I just eat a late breakfast. So, mini fast overnight, and then it's eggs. I freaking love eggs. So a ton of them, a ton, maybe like 4 eggs, a third to a half an avocado. And then depending on my training is how much carbs I eat. So I do mind what I'm eating. So if it's a big training day, I'm not afraid of carbs, but if I'm not training, I'll probably just stick with my eggs and avocado, maybe some peanut butter. Actually,
love peanut butter. I was waiting for you to say that.
I love actually combining those three things. My favorite thing to eat is like a peanut butter avocado omelet. So I'll just put, which just sounds really gross to most people, and I totally understand, but just like a big protein fat bomb, and that will just fill me up and keep my engine burning hot. And, yeah, I'll eat toaster, whatever carb oatmeal, whatever carb I want in the morning also if I have some training coming up.
So then if you had to guess on grams of carbs, I mean, because you're talking about fat bombs and, boy, I'm thinking keto and you mentioned paleo. So then just on carb intake and you're working out, you're doing your just call them 30-minute workouts. You're working out 6 times a week. So with that and all your training, how many carbs would you guess you're bringing in?
See, I don't really guess, but if I had to on a low day, probably as low as like 150 and then 150 to 300. So it's really not very high.
300 is a pretty good amount of carbs.
Maybe if I'm eating them all my meals a day, if I'm heavy training, but I'm just trying to be liberal with that number because I don't want to claim like low carb, but it's one or two of my meals a day. Two if I'm training hard and one if it's off day or.
Okay. Let's don't, I don't want the main focus is just not, I just want to know a little bit about what you're putting into your body because of the way I've seen you perform. And then, one of the things I wanted to ask you about with your epic hybrid training, everything that you put yourself through, and as we speak now, a while back, we were talking and you were talking about just putting yourself in the pain zone.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's one of the things that separates you from a lot of competitors who would like to be at your level. Your mental toughness, your ability to push yourself at that level where most people just like, hey, man, I'm redlining. I'm at 8,500 RPMs. I'm ready to explode. That's when you start thriving. I've just seen you push through that so many times. Tell me about doing that. And you also said some of these people get worried about, oh, man, I'm having a heart attack or this is too hard. You're going to pass out before you die.
Mm-hmm.
You said that.
Yep.
Which are just tough things because, I mean, you are a realist and you know what real hard training is. So tell me about pushing yourself through that limit almost every single day.
Yeah, I don't really know what is wrong with me that allows me to do that. But it's so hard for me to not do that. Honestly, I have to be more careful going into a workout saying, hey, I want to actually take it easy in this workout, but I'll hop into one of my classes, my epic classes. And I just, it's not even like I'm competing with anyone. I'm just counting the reps within the 40 seconds in my head and I just start going crazy and getting as many as I can. And the next round, I try to beat myself from the previous round. So, I don't know what it is. I guess it's innate that I just really, want to push myself to that limit every day just to kind of, I don't know. I guess it's just to make sure I'm doing everything I can. I mean, pain is a good indicator of that you went your hardest, that you're trying your hardest. And I know it's not, well, some people would argue it's not about going hard all the time, but for me, and especially if I'm going to hone in on these short explosive races, that is what I'm training for. So that's really what I want to simulate all the time.
I've seen on your Instagram account where you've gone to travel a little bit, but you didn't have any weights around and you're doing these makeshift workouts. I mean, is there ever a period of time that you go without training or is it always something and you're just inventing something just using body weight?
Yeah, it's not hard at all to make a super hard workout with just body weight. So I certainly can work out anywhere, but I'll go. I'm a little bit of an addict, just like addict any athlete to working out. So I won't usually go beyond one day without doing anything. I do try to take that one complete day off, but I'm always doing something, even if it's, you know, I'm traveling. It's a 20-minute interval training workout with just my body weight. I can get it done. I just went on family vacation to upstate New York, you know, on the lake. I brought one kettlebell and these rock climbing grips that I could tie to a tree. And I think a heavy sandbag. And I got after it because I had this and some other stuff coming up. So, and get my family to hop in too. So there's really no excuse.
There's no excuses. We're talking about that. Let's talk about Broken Skull Challenge for a little bit. What made you decide to come out here and give us a try?
I think it was Alex had, since he was in season one, he referred both Hunter and I, ironically enough. And I was living out in Malibu and sent in an application just like everybody else. And I mean, I knew I was good at this sport, but again, nobody really knows how they are at the bracket stuff, at the head-to-heads. But that's actually something I'm trying to focus a lot more on, especially for these all-star type episodes. And through Alex, I've gotten a little bit more into MMA and grappling and trying to dabble in some of that stuff.
What did you think when you came out here? You're coming into the unknown and you've got to go through 3 rounds of heavy duty competition. And it's, you know, you against another female, and it's whether it's in a trench or whatever, you know, the task at hand is another human being. What did you think about that? I mean, because you're an OCR racer.
Yeah, it was kind of awesome to be able to actually go head-to-head, because, you know, a foot race, you just all run. You either see someone's back or they see yours, and that's about your interaction. So I love that because, you know, growing up playing basketball, it's very very head-to-head all the time and lots of contact. So I was very excited at that prospect. And what I love about it is it's a small group. There's lots of, like, mental game too involved. You know, you get your girls that are super chatty and nice, and I kind of like to be a little quieter. I don't really want to be friends with someone I'm about to compete with. So there's that aspect of it. And then I think back then it was season 3, is the last episode of season 3 I was on, super early on. I think I really had only YouTubed a couple episodes before I came. It's a lot of unknown, which is cool too. Not only are you bringing on new events all the time, but even if so, you don't know what pool obstacles you're going to get.
Hey, talk to me about the Skull Buster. And you've run it a few times, and we'll just leave it at that. How does this course compare to the courses that you're used to running? Because everything in that Spartan world is way over, mm-hmm. you know, the half mile that we're used. And obviously, you know, this is a competition show, which is for television. So with the 3 rounds, hey, man, we ain't got time to run a 3 mile race.
Yeah. You know, super boring to watch, too.
Yeah. You know the deal.
Yep.
And so it's high adrenaline, high octane, go get them. What did you think that first time you got a chance to blaze down that Skull Buster?
I loved it. I mean, it's everything that I excel at in a Spartan race, only without all the darn running. So, I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's super tough. And I think that on one hand, it's the way that you've compounded obstacle after obstacle in order to jack up that heart rate. And then it's just a matter of your heart rate being through the roof for that entire time while having to do both strength and skill-based things. So I loved it.
Man, you are scarred up, not just from this show, just from your athletic endeavors. I mean, you're a go-getter. You got the barbed wire scars from your Spartan races. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got the scars on your tops of your shoulders and then sliding down from your ankle to your hip.
Yeah.
I mean, those scars, they're cool, and they're battle scars that you're probably proud of. But you ain't afraid of anything. Talk to me about all that. I mean, for some women, it'd be a vanity thing. Oh, I can't believe I'm all scarred up.
Oh,
you wear those scars well.
Thank you. Well, like I said, my mother is a little more concerned about them than I am. But it's part of it. I kind of love it. I mean, I don't love having – I mean, I hope for the most part they go away. But when it comes down to it during the competition, you're not thinking about like your skin being taken off of your legs, which a lot of it was. But I didn't know until later. So that's just not what you're thinking. And if I was smart, I'd probably put on a pair of pants, but it's just too darn hot. And so just, you know, you're going to do the most streamlined thing for the sport and just take the consequences.
Hey, living out here in Malibu for so long, Malibu's right on the water. Mm-hmm. We're not on the water. It's a little bit hot out here, but you're used to when that California sun comes out and zaps people. We've had people come out here and all of a sudden they get in a Skull Buster, they get tensed up. You think, hey, man, this is a challenge where – and in theory, they could catch their breath, but no, because they're so focused on maybe it was Nutcracker and that one young lady from Alaska, just that heat zapped her. How has the heat affected you, or has it ever affected you out here?
I'm actually realizing more and more that the heat is like a huge factor in these competitions, because I ran a race a couple months ago where there was a pretty similar, pretty short obstacle race where it was a prelim in the morning or the early afternoon and then the finals at night. And it was a short race, under 20 minutes. And my first time, it was super, super hot out. And I had my eyes rolling back in my head. I was hot. And, my second time, it was the evening and the sun had gone down. I ran 2 minutes faster. And that is a lot of time in a under 20 minute race. So it's a huge factor, but I think it's definitely advantageous to be used to it and having done it and just used to that feeling. If you haven't felt it before, you're definitely, you're going down, but I don't think anyone's immune to it affecting you.
Hey, I had another question, but I want to make sure I get this out so I don't forget about it. Coming up on August 26th, don't you have a show on NBC?
Tough Mudder X. Yeah, Tough Mudder X on NBC. Let me get the date correct.
So it's Tough Mudder X. It's going to be on NBC.
August 27th.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's 1 p.m. Eastern time on CBS. So Tough Mudder X will be a very, very cool thing to watch.
I will be checking that out. If you're listening to this podcast, you must watch this. Let's talk about, before we wrap this thing up, because we've both got things to do, Tough Mudder X, Spartan Racing. Which one is tougher? Which world do you like the best? Or this is a political answer.
Yeah.
Gotta walk a fence here.
Yeah. So, tough is measured in different ways. I think, you know, you could put yourself on a 13-mile, you know, a half marathon obstacle race on a mountain where you're getting like 6,000 feet of gain. To me, that's a hard race because it is grueling. And that's what I would call it. But then you take this half mile course here on the Skullbuster. I would say that's harder because I think, and it probably has just as much of a rate of completion. You know, some people bow out of the long ones, but some people pass out and bow out of this one too. So to me, these are more challenging because I could get through any amount of grueling, but the place you have to put yourself mentally to get through a short one with the amount of skill and the amount of weight and all that, I might classify that as harder, but I mean, I'm biased. It's certainly my favorite is the shorter stuff.
So this year, with the season being underway, what are your obligations to either Tough Mudder or Spartan? How many races will you run this season?
So I'm on the Spartan Race Pro Team, and I'm contracted to run the NBC Series, which is a series of six races that culminate to the World Championships of Spartan Race in Tahoe at the end of the year. So it's super fun. It's all supers and beasts. So like I said, either over 8 or over 13 miles, which is not exactly where my focus is this year, but I love them. They're super fun. It's a great team. It's a great company. It's a great course that they put on. They do know how to break down the body and how to put things in succession and put those weighted carries somewhere. And it's super heavy stuff. And I appreciate that about them as a company, as opposed to Tough Mudder. I've never done a normal Tough Mudder, but, from what I hear, it's more, not as much, weight bearing. But I'm excited because of Tough Mudder X and things like the Skullbuster that they'll be popularized because people want to watch them. And I think that's where obviously the money is, and that's what keeps something going is the money. So I'm very excited for the prospect of 2018 for more things like this and Tough Mudder X and shorter things to come up. I do really enjoy, to get back to your question, I'm doing the NBC series and also the Spartan Stadium series, which is where I excel in Spartan the most. It's a 3-mile race in a ballpark. So you have your obstacle race without the mud, which is fine by me. And that is your closest thing to like a red line for 30 minutes. Super high heart rate, lots of more exercise-based stations, and then your classic like cargo nets, walls, things like that.
So going into a Spartan race, let's talk specifically about the 3-mile stadium races.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do from a standpoint of prepping for that race when you get up, what you put in your body to be ready by the time they say go?
Yeah, there are super early races, and I don't really like to work out early anymore. So I'll have my coffee, my Alsa Energies, energy powder. And then if I get a chance before, if there's enough time to eat, I mean, normally I'm just kind of putting down some oatmeal or something. You don't honestly need too much fuel. People, I think, freak out, get a little too superstitious about what they're eating before a race. People always ask me, what do you eat before a race? Or what should I eat? I said, what do you eat every day? Eat that. Don't change a thing. You don't want to throw yourself off before a race. So a little bit of that, recovering with some Boku superfoods. Going back to my diet, we talked about breakfast, but lunch is usually a shake using Boku superfoods. So people are like, what are you on a diet? You just eat a shake for lunch. But I'm packing like, 500-600 calories into this thing with protein powder and almond butter and a banana and stuff like that. So that's my routine there. And then I'll hit that race. It's always pretty much just under 30 minutes. And that's that.
I've seen on your Instagram account, every now and then you love to have a glass of wine.
Oh yeah.
So tell me, from a guy who likes to drink a lot, you being a high level world-class athlete, how often can you enjoy your wine or whatever your drink of choice? What is your drink of choice?
Yeah, I was just going to say wine, beer, liquor. I do not discriminate against alcohol. So I love a good glass of whatever it is. So I do. I love red wine. I love a good beer. I love a variety of beer. So, you know, I could go for a hearty IPA. I could go for a light beer on a cold day, you know, a wheat beer, whatever it is. And then, you know, I love me a good cocktail. So I'm easy to please. But as far as often as I drink as an athlete, it really is not that much. I try to limit it to about once a week in season. So, and that's mostly dietary more than anything. And for me, it's not the calories in the drink; it's the calories I eat when I'm drinking. So,
right.
And just to stay mentally sharp, honestly. So I usually just save that for, you know, a weekend or something, and then. You know, it's just, if you don't have something coming up in a couple months, you can be a little bit more liberal with that. But back in the, I can remember the days back in those CrossFit days that I was talking about back in Malibu, where I was having a glass of wine and a bar of chocolate every night. And I couldn't maintain that anymore.
That's hard to perform on that.
Yeah.
Hey, with all of the stuff that you do, you're training yourself and then you're training other people. Epic Hybrid in New York City. Do you have any other hobbies, any passions, anything that you're passionate about that you like to do when you're not competing?
Yeah, I feel kind of boring when people ask me that because they all are active things. Like, I don't have any sort of like artistic hobby, to be honest, but I love the outdoors. I'm lucky enough in New York City to be close to my family who's in Connecticut, so playing with the nieces and nephews. But when I was in Malibu and Miami, I mean, it's surfing, it's paddleboarding, it's mountain biking, hiking. Any sort of outdoor adventure is what I'm really passionate about. And I'm sure when I'm out of the city at some point, I would love to get back to somewhere where I can be doing those things every day.
Last question. What's the worst thing that's ever happened to you during the Spartan race?
That's a good question. It's crazy because I've probably run over 50 races at this point, and I have not had any major injuries. I think the worst thing that's happened to me is honestly just in this year I ran a New Jersey Beast, which was a lot of elevation gain up a mountain, 13 miles, and actually came in second off of just under 30-minute workouts, which, and my legs felt great going uphill. But just the, I just totally bonked. Like, I thought I was going to just be found on the side of the mountain. Like,
explain that term, because you said totally bonked, and Alan Bishop out here was using that specific term. That means what?
Yeah, it just means your body is physically totally depleted of what it needs to keep moving. And usually it's kind of like the brain before the body. So your eyes start rolling back in your head and a little disoriented. You can't even really tell what's going on at first. And then eventually your body will give out. But, also when you're running that kind of distance, I had nutrition on me, like a little chew or something and a little waffle, honey stinger waffle, but you don't want to eat at that point. But, I really thought it was like mile 10. And I thought I was going down. I was like, well, I'm not going to pull out. Like, I'm not a person that's ever going to finish a race. I guess I'm just going to go until I pass out. And I was the closest I ever felt to that. But then eventually I reached for this waffle. I was like, just like chewing on it. And I slowly came back to life, sure enough, and came charging down that hill. And it's amazing what food does. You actually need food to do things.
And I guess I have never in all my endeavors, which have not been as extreme as yours or as high level in the competition standpoint, have ever reached that state. Alan was telling me about it, and I was like, he had just totally bonked, and basically his peripheral vision started disappearing for him, and it just like was closing in, it was tunneling. He ran right into his garage door. They were just coming off a ride, and he crashed, and his wife goes in. I don't know what she fed him, but she just fed him something, and sure enough, 30 minutes later, there it comes back. He's all fine and dandy again. How much of a head trip is that? You just weren't going to stop and just keep going?
Yeah. It's probably not the smartest thing. But yeah, I would never quit anything, really, I don't think.
Sitting here, right now, how long do you want to continue doing what you're doing?
That's a good question. I think as long as I'm making money at it, or of course enjoying it, I would, like I said, I'm really excited about the prospect of more of these short explosive things coming up. If those opportunities keep popping up, I'm going to keep training because it's the way I like to train anyway. So, I'm also, you know, I'm interested in dabbling in some other things.
Like what?
Like maybe kettlebell sport. Always a little bit interested in MMA, but that would be like a drop everything and train MMA. But maybe like start with, you know, entering a grappling tournament or something like that. But have you ever heard of kettlebell sport?
No, I was watching you do the kettlebells. I know you love them. I've never picked one up.
Like this old, I mean, I don't know too much about it, but it's like this old, I don't even want to say what roots, so I don't get it wrong. I assume it's Russian, but it could be wrong. They call it long cycle. Basically, you're clean and jerking. There's a few different events, clean and jerk, snatch, and I think just jerks, where you're basically just doing that for 10 minutes, as many reps as possible, and you have your weight classes and your weight. But I think that those people, I mean, you look up some YouTube videos, those people, like, they are tough as nails, and they are, like I said, it's the ultimate strength and conditioning tool, and it's only 10 minutes, but it looks like the most painful 10 minutes of all time. And I've done, you know, close to that in intervals and whatever. I know where it makes my muscles and my heart go. And of course I'm drawn to that, drawn to that pain that it looks like they're in. So that seems pretty cool. And yeah.
Last question. I was searching on YouTube as I was thinking about our conversation, and I saw your audition tape for American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
And there you were on Pepperdine University sign.
Yeah.
So what happened? Did you ever get selected to be on Ninja Warrior?
Yeah, it's funny. I did. It was a few years ago. It was back when I was in Malibu doing CrossFit, and I did. I went to a qualifiers. I didn't do anything spectacular. And what happens is hundreds of people run a night, and what you see is the handful of people they choose to highlight. So I think I would do better on it now that I've been at Epic. My grip is like 10 million times better. I thought since I CrossFitted, I had good grip. Well, that was not the case. I have great grip now. However, Ninja Warrior, it's not something that interests me a ton because I think it's just like a rock climber sport, and it's like whoever can monkey around the best. And I don't want to just hang on things all day. I want to have overall fit body. So it's not something I would ever put a ton of energy towards.
Just had to find out. Hey, anything else you want to talk about, push, or put out there before we hit the stop button?
Not really. I just would love for more people to get into interval training and just to stop thinking of CrossFit as the only functional fitness program. And that's such a trendy word right now, but there's so much more in fitness, so many other ways to move your body. And just for even the average Joe out there, just to know that you can put time on a clock, set amount of time work, set amount of rest, maybe a little upper, a little lower, and a little cardio movement. You could always get a kick-ass workout. So Epics are growing, so if you see one come to your area, check it out. And yeah, that's about it.
And just for your information, what I've noticed since being out here, this is going into 5 seasons of Broken Skull Challenge, when I get all of my information on everybody, you see the backgrounds that they come from. And so as it started out, we had a lot of people from CrossFit. We had a lot of AAU amateur wrestlers coming out from college. So CrossFit, amateur wrestlers or just people with general fitness backgrounds, CrossFitters started coming out. Then the obstacle course racers started coming out. You know, there's always a few MMA people, but now more and more I'm seeing HIIT.
Yep.
And so it's the high intensity interval training, which we're starting to see out here more and more. So what you're speaking of is starting to spread, because the proof is the background that I'm getting from the people that are coming out to the Broken Skull Challenge.
Exactly. And I hope that that continues to spread. And I hope that that HIIT is synonymous with Epic in these few years to come.
Hey, just last plug. I know Alex, I got a chance to film something. He was here. I got a chance to film something down there when we were pushing the show several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Epic Hybrid Training Gym in New York City can be found at to go get a workout and some instruction.
Where are they?
Yes.
Well, epichybridtraining.com, but there's two in New York City. Midtown East and Bryant Park, and then there's franchised outside of New York. So Westchester, Providence, Rhode Island, Miami, Florida, just opened in San Francisco a couple months ago, and coming to D.C. and Connecticut by the end of the year.
Awesome. That's cool. Cassidy Watton, here on the Steve Austin Show. Awesome talking to you. Finally, be able to sit down and have a conversation.
Yes, finally. I really appreciate it, Steve.
Good seeing you.
You too.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cues. Time to wrap up the podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before we wrap up this week, let me take a minute here to tell you about how you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. We all got to-do lists. Running around, taking care of business here and there, it can be overwhelming. Well, here's one more thing, but you'll dig this. How about saving hundreds of dollars on car insurance? And the good thing is, you can do it right from your computer. All you have to do is go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to do you do today. I got four more days of work out here at the toughest show on television, the Broken Skull Challenge. Looking forward to getting out of here and getting back into Marina Del Rey. This has been an awesome extravaganza of an experience. I think you'll really enjoy Season 5. Once again, season premiere, Tuesday, September 26th, 10 p.m., 9 Central on CMT. Set your DVR. This is going to be a season that you will not want to miss. All the shirts I'm wearing out here at the Broken Skull Challenge can be found at ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin. All those shirts can be available pretty quick, and I think you will dig them. Hey, man, if you're thirsty, I got a beer. It's an IPA, and it's the best IPA on planet Earth. It's called Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company. And you can get Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. If you aren't in Cali, check InsideTheCellar.com to see if they ship to your state. And if you're looking to get either the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife or the new Working Man's Knife, you can find both knives at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. And I got to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Hey, before I ride off in the sunset, I forgot to give you guys something to watch. If you ain't seen it, you got to see it. Sign up for the WWE Network and check out SummerSlam. I don't know about the first half of the card, but the second half of the card was lights out. Check out SummerSlam on the WWE Network, and that's the bottom line, because I said so. Folks, coming up this Thursday, it's the last of my phone call sessions I took with you guys a couple of months ago, and then I will be out of production here at the Broken Skull Challenge after Friday, and we will be starting from scratch, starting fresh, and talking with more people and more people from the wrestling business. Folks, until then, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch you down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.